I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. Yesterday, Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney and Council President Darrell Clark announced how they want the city to spend $20 million to address the crisis of violent crime. They want the money to go to community groups in neighborhoods that have not received funding in the past. Clark said these organizations have waited way too long for serious resources, and we want to make sure we get them the necessary tools and support. Mayor Kenney has been criticized by members of City Council, including our guest, Councilperson Jamie Gaudier, for not declaring an emergency because of the crisis of violent crime in the city. If the pace of homicides continues at the same rate, we could see 600 homicides by the end of the year. Already more than 1,000 people have been shot and survived, many with debilitating injuries. The level of violence is devastating a number of communities and traumatizing residents, most especially the families who have lost loved ones. Today in Radio Times, the roots of violent crime in Philadelphia and how to address the crisis. We have three guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. As I mentioned, Jamie Gaudier is a Philadelphia City Council person for the 3rd District, which includes West Philadelphia and Southwest Philadelphia. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Also with us is Jessica Beard. She's Temple University Hospital Trauma Surgeon, Director of Research at the Philadelphia Center for Gun Violence Reporting. She's also a Stone Lee Foundation Fellow. Jessica Beard, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And rounding out our trio of guests, Arturo Zinni. He's Program Director for Healing Hurt People at the Center for Nonviolence and Social Justice at Drexel University's Dornsife School of Public Health. Arturo Zinni, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Well, let's begin with a kind of overarching question. And Jamie Gaudier, I'm going to start with you. Philadelphia is not the only city experiencing a huge increase in violent crime, but we're seeing an increase over last year, which saw an increase over the previous year. What do you think is driving it, especially in the city of Philadelphia?
I absolutely think it's related to the pandemic and the fact that communities that were already disinvested were so cut off from resources. Schools were closed for many people. Their rec centers were closed. Many people lost their jobs or couldn't access social services in the ways that they could before. And I think all of that kind of adds to the disinvestment that already existed. And I also think violence is contagious. So typically when we see one shooting, we're going to see a retaliatory shooting and on and on and on.
Well, let me pick up on the pandemic question and go to you, Jessica Beard. This is something that you have looked at. Can we see if the pandemic is at least one cause for this increase in violent crime?
Yes. So we kind of noticed this uptick in violence in the daily care of trauma patients and specifically gunshot injured patients at Temple, which is in North Philadelphia, and it's the busiest trauma center for gunshot wound patients. And so from that kind of daily experience in the hospital, that prompted us to actually do a research study to look at when did this uptick in violence start. And long story short, sure. It seems that the uptick really started on March 16th of 2020 in Philadelphia. And that's the day of the first containment policy, which was the closure of non-essential businesses. And while this particular research study can't necessarily say why that happened, I agree with Jamie that COVID-19 and specifically the containment policies, many of which, you know, have been unmitigated, although mm-hmm. that's getting better, worsen structural inequities in the city. We know that access to health care and access to social services are protective against firearm violence. And when those are taken away, it would make sense and it follows that gun violence increases.
But it sounds like we can almost date this in Philadelphia.
Yes, we looked and we compared, you know, that to potentially the murder of George Floyd, thinking that we saw an uptick around that time and actually found that the increase started on March 16th.
Wow. You, Arturo Zinni, mm-hmm. you work with young people and people who have been victims of violence. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense to you? Can we look at the pandemic at least to help explain what's going on?
Yes, I totally agree with, I think, both Council Person and Dr. Beard explained. That's what we see, I guess, clinically with there's been not only a significant number of referrals from all across the city to our program, but we have seen that increase in gun violence and also an increase because, as it was mentioned, the inability to access certain services due to COVID generated also an uptick in violence.
Because of the, I mean, many people were isolated. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the pandemic created great stress for many, many people.
Yes.
I mean, do you see those as kind of factors in increasing this risk of violence?
Yes. Yes, we do.
Because people just, they didn't have someone to talk to, something
exactly.
like, as simple as that.
Yes, and a lot of times, I mean, I think we were, at Healing Her People, very, we were able to switch quickly to telehealth services, so offering virtual services, but we know not everyone can access virtual services, right? And it's hard to replace that, you know, in-person interaction that is so powerful when you're providing a service, working, you know, talking to someone who has been deeply traumatized mm-hmm. by community violence. And, you know, in this case, I know we're talking about gun violence specifically, and, you know, family members who have lost a loved one to gun violence.
Let me go back to you, Jamie Godia, and even to your district, which is West Philadelphia and Southwest Philadelphia. How has this problem, it's gun violence largely, but it's also violence in many different categories. How has that affected people living in your district?
Horribly. It's been a very traumatic time for the district. And we're talking about, in some places, we're seeing a lot of street group violence. And so these sort of geographic factions that are biting back and forth at one another. So you can have someone who lives in a neighborhood where they have shootings on a regular basis.
Like that's every day kind of basis?
I mean, it might not be every day, but it might be frequent, right? Several times a week, several times a month. And for someone living in that type of condition where they don't feel they can send their kids outside or they don't feel safe just going to the grocery store. I went to the scene of one shooting and I asked a young woman how she was feeling and she started to cry. And she said that she doesn't think that anything will ever change here and she just wants to get out. And so it's incredibly traumatic, not just for the victims and their families, but for entire communities that feel like they are under siege.
Let me go to you, Jessica Beard. I mean, in many ways, this is a public health crisis, right? I mean, it's the way Jamie Godier was talking about people sort of living with this chronic and constant fear of violence.
Absolutely. And I think that it needs to be addressed as such. You know, up until the onset of the pandemic and the containment policies, we had a major gun violence problem. It was always there. We were always responding to it as trauma surgeons and as public health practitioners, but it's escalated to unprecedented levels now. And like Jamie said, it's a cycle. You will not going to be able to quickly turn off the effects of this heavy amount of trauma. And I think that beginning to clearly to me, it's a health problem, right? Like I take care of people who have been shot as a physician, and taking it and addressing it as a public health problem is going to be key to getting down to solutions.
What does that actually mean? I mean, I think we understand, hopefully we understand public health as it relates to COVID, but as it relates to gun violence, what does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have a good model when it comes to COVID and a public health approach. The CDC has a model for a public health approach to injury. So first you want to define the problem, which means that you measure the problem. And even our data sources on shooting victims are limited. We don't have a comprehensive epidemiologic data source that includes non-fatal injuries at a national level. And at a local level, you know, we're using the police data that's publicly available, but it would be nice to have epidemiologically collected data. Mm. And I know the Department of Health is working on that, but we need more support for that. And then you identify risk and protective factors. And, you know, that's kind of what this study that we did kind of shows, which is essentially that if you take away people's social support, if you take away people's jobs and their livelihood and their health insurance, gun violence will spike. And that keys us into solutions, which is the next step in a public health approach. And you need to test those and make sure that they work. And the goal is actually in public health to not treat disease like I do as a trauma surgeon, but it's to prevent disease. And with violence, it's so important, right? Because if you can prevent violence, then there's no cycle of violence. And then the final step is you have widespread adoption of effective strategies.
And I want to pick up on that and talk about strategies that work. But let me go back to you, Arturo Zinni. And again, from the people that you work with, that your organization works with, Healing Hurt People. I've interviewed several people affiliated with that group. And one of the phrases is hurt people, hurt people. And I know for a number of victims of gun violence that the aggressor and the victim often can be the same person. Help us understand that.
Yes, I think that's such a an important point. And just also to piggyback on what Jessica said about, you know, like the gun violence epidemic in the city has been here for a long time, right? And for example, Dr. Rich and Dr. Corbin founded Healing Her People almost 15 years ago, right? So we have seen, now it's just gotten to a level that it's, you know, beyond what we've seen, right? But this has been a chronic problem, public health issue for the city. And as you were saying, the hurt people, you know, it's, I think, the importance of when you work with either a young person, a teenager, or a young adult, let's say in this case, like, it could be someone who was an aggressor, right? Like, talking about gun violence, shot somebody else. When you talk to that person and you learn about their life history, their development, like, they're always have been traumatized themselves early on.
They've witnessed violence.
And it's not just community violence. Sometimes could be like witnessing domestic violence, child abuse, and not to mention, you know, for our communities, like ongoing exposure to racism, marginalization, intergenerational trauma. Right, their parents were also traumatized. So all these contexts, you know, sort of fosters violence in a way, right? So that's why we talk about hurt people, hurting people potentially. But I think it's also, and probably we're going to talk about this, like talk about a counter narrative to this, right? And see all the strength and resiliency that we see, and I see every time I talk to adolescents and young adults from like these communities impacted by violence.
And I do want to pick up on all of that, but let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about Philadelphia's problem of violence, of violent crime, specifically gun violence. And again, our guests are Jamie Godier, Philadelphia City Councilperson for the 3rd District. That includes West Philadelphia and Southwest Philadelphia. The voice you just heard is Arturo Zinni, Program Director for Healing Hurt People. That's at the Center for Nonviolence and Social Justice at Drexel University. And also with us, Jessica Beard. She's a Temple University Hospital Trauma Surgeon and Director of Research at the Philadelphia Center for Gun Violence Reporting. And you can join our conversation, and we do want to hear from you. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can pick up the phone and give us a call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We want to know your solutions. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Philadelphia, as we all know, is facing a crisis of violent crime. That is true in other cities across the country. There had been more than 300 homicides so far this year. And today on Radio Times, we're looking at the roots of the problem and possible solutions. Jimmy Gotti, let me go to you. You have had a rather public argument with Mayor Jim Kenney about his unwillingness to declare a state of emergency to deal with this problem of violent crime in the city. Where do things stand with you and the mayor?
Right. So I put forward the resolution you know, asking the mayor to declare a citywide emergency in September of 2020. And I did that after realizing that not only were we in a pandemic, but we had this horrible epidemic of gun violence that was primarily impacting Black and brown people in our city and many of them in my district. And I did that also because I didn't understand, nor did my constituents understand what the city was really doing to address this and to address the dramatic spike. And so in calling for an emergency declaration, I was really asking the mayor to bring all of the operating agencies of the city together to have gun violence be their top priority and to address neighborhoods in need, to draw on the private sector and rally them towards investing in this issue, and to bring solutions faster, evidence-based solutions that have worked to prevent violence in other parts of the country, to implement them here in Philadelphia faster, and to do all of that more transparently. And I firmly believe that if we can't keep people alive as a city, I don't know what else we're doing. This should be the most important thing on our radar. I advocated for this for almost a year, and the mayor formally declined, I guess, about a week and a half ago, unfortunately. And for some reason, he sort of was very focused on the fact that, you know, in his mind, declaring an emergency wouldn't mean anything. But what I was asking him for was an emergency response. And at this,
more than a declaration.
Absolutely. And in this moment, if he doesn't want to name an emergency, that's completely fine with me. But we still have to demonstrate an emergency response toward preventing violence.
So yesterday there was this press conference and a discussion about how to spend $20 million. Does that get closer to what you're talking about, or is there more to be done?
Well, that came about because several council members during this most recent budget cycle banded together to demand $100 million in new money for violence prevention for FY22. We didn't win the 100, but we did win $68 million new dollars. $20 million of that was specifically designated for the grassroots organizations in Philadelphia that have the relationships and the credibility to work with people in our communities to alleviate violence. Yesterday, we came together to announce the monitoring group that will oversee that process and talk some about the process as well.
But you're talking about giving money to organizations in the community that know the people.
Yeah.
That perhaps are already doing this work, right?
Are already doing this work unsupported. Right. And on shoestring budgets. These are the groups that we need to invest in this moment.
Jessica Beard, let me turn to you, and even picking up on this public health approach and the idea of having data and knowing what works and what doesn't work. You know, 20 million, 68 million. How do we invest that money knowing that there's going to be some kind of return? And by that, I mean, it's going to have some kind of effect on lowering the level of violence in the city?
That's a hard question.
I know, I realize. But, I mean, we can throw money at programs, but we need to figure out what works, right?
Right. And, I mean, the thing about gun violence is that it's not one disease, right? So there's kind of the gun part, which is a very political part, and there are certainly policies that clearly prevent gun violence when they're enacted. So that's kind of one area of intervention that can address gun violence. And then there's also violence, which exists in all forms. You know, as a trauma surgeon, I take care of people who are stabbed, which, you know, frankly, if you get stabbed in your heart, for example, you're much more likely to live than if you get shot. So, you know, it's in some ways sort of a better situation, but it's still violence and it still hurts people. And so, you know, we need to address violence as well. The solutions are very complicated. And there are many solutions that can work together in concert to decrease gun violence. And it may not be that a small community organization is able to show a decrease in gun violence, right? That's not necessarily what we're looking for when we're looking for evidence, quote unquote, of effect. You know, maybe we're looking for, you know, impact at the block level or at the smaller community level. And that's still a public health approach to gun violence. What public health means is that we help populations, you know, maybe at the city level, politically, and at the block level with the grassroots community organization.
But the overall goal is to reduce the level of violence. Yeah. You want to add something?
Yes.
Go ahead, Jenny.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about what some of these groups are doing. So these are organizations like Yeah Philly, for example, that have relationships with young people who may have been involved in violence in the past. And they have the trust of those young people and can interrupt future violence, can mentor them, can set them on a path to opportunity. These are groups that are providing trauma services in a way that can help people heal and that can also tamp down retaliatory violence. These are groups that are doing jobs programs, and they have the reach into the community for those who are most at risk. So the work that these groups are doing is critical and absolutely should be supported, and I'm grateful that we're doing that with $20 million. It's not a stand-in for an emergency response. I want to be clear about that.
No, I hear you. And Arturo, let me go to you, because your organization works directly with people, mm-hmm. and the idea of healing hurt people, mm-hmm. what works? I mean, what helps someone overcome the kind of violence that they have either experienced or witnessed?
Yes, I think, and sort of what both Jamie and Jessica brought up about the importance of having people who are credible messengers, right, with like similar lived experiences as those who survived trauma and violence is critical, and also pairing that with evidence-based practices. So I think our communities and our people deserve only the best services. So it's pairing that cultural relevance with what we know that works. And at Healing Hurt People, we do that, right? So, for example, we have half of our team members are young men with shared experiences of violence, many of them survivors of gun violence themselves, who are the first to do the outreach to family members or people who were shot, because as it was mentioned earlier, like about 80% of those who are shot in Philly luckily survive, right? Mm-hmm. And then we have to deal with the aftermath of, you know, not only the physical wounds, but the emotional wounds. So having that approach that it's with people with similar lived experience and also trained, in our case, clinicians, training evidence-based practices who can help overcome traumatic stress reactions for children and young adults.
And this is very personal. I mean, this is very personal and interpersonal.
Exactly.
What you're describing there.
Yes.
And your organization has lost people to gun violence.
We have lost people to gun violence. Yeah. It affects, you know, of course, not only the families, but 2 weeks ago we had a 16-year-old youth who was killed, and the son of a client of ours who was 20 years old, both killed to gun violence. Yeah.
And to you, Jamie Gaudier, I mean, hearing something like that, and obviously in the district that you serve, just the level of trauma and loss, you know, it just must be overwhelming.
Absolutely. I attended a couple days ago a vigil for a young man named KJ, who was a boys Latin student who was gunned down about a week ago. And hearing his mother cry and say, he was my whole life. What am I going to do after the casket closes? Mm. Going to the funeral for the young man, Sakar, that was gunned down on the 4th of July on 60th Street, and hearing everyone talk about what a bright young star he was, right, and what a good person he was. We are losing our potential in this city. We are seeing all of our potential just bleed into the streets, and we have to, I think, develop a response that more matches the pace of the violence that we're seeing.
Let me go back to you and to you, Jessica Beer, because you're involved with the Philadelphia Center for Gun Violence reporting. The problem of gun violence is pervasive in Philadelphia and in other communities as well. How do we get sort of guns out of the, or illegal guns out of the hands of people that are going to use them for no good?
I don't know that we fully know the answer to that question. I mean, what we do know, and there's more and more scholarship in this arena, is that certain policies surrounding gun ownership are associated with decreased rates of homicide. So universal background checks, permits to purchase, those types of policies can prevent homicide. And I know the city has been involved in, you know, trying to change policies at the city level around guns, but it's a very challenging problem and one that we need a lot of support from the state and nationally for.
Let me just quickly reintroduce everybody. That's Jessica Beard, Temple University Hospital trauma surgeon. Also with us, Jamie Godier, Philadelphia City Council person for the 3rd District, Arturo Zinni, Program Director for Healing Hurt People, affiliated with Drexel University School of Public Health. We are talking about Philadelphia's problem of violence, specifically gun violence, and what to do about it. Let me just read a couple of comments. One from Bill: if the roots of city violence involves territory, and that territory is often related to drug sales, would decriminalizing drug use and sales or making them legal help lessen the violence? A related comment from Dan: I'm a family and public health physician, and this issue is happening in other places besides just the city of Philadelphia. Drug trades fuel gun purchases and shooting. Can I go back to you, Jamie Godier? I mean, is it drugs and guns? Is that our part of our, a big part of our problem here?
I mean, certainly we had way too many guns on the street. So, yes, that's a part of the problem. Some of this is over drugs. It's not all over drugs. Some of it is over beefs and disagreements that may arise on social media or in the streets. It's not all drugs. And I think that, you know, certainly we've had difficulty lessening the supply of guns, and we are currently suing the state over that issue. Even though that remains difficult, we can have more solutions locally. One solution that I would put forth is getting way more outreach workers and credible messengers in our neighborhoods. These are people who have lived experiences. They know what the beefs are. They know the players, and they're able to many times step in and to help, you know, calm conflicts before they turn into shootings. That's a strategy that Philadelphia uses right now on somewhat of a small level, and I think we can really expand it.
You're nodding your head, Arturo. I mean, the idea of trusted messengers.
Yes, I couldn't agree more with Jamie and the importance of empowering grassroots organizations to be able to provide that service.
Let me go back to you, Jessica Beard. We're talking in Philadelphia. It's the poorest large city in the country. What's the connection between violence and poverty?
Well, yes. So Philadelphia is the poorest big city in the country. I believe a poverty rate in the city is 24%, which is just astounding. Yeah. And
it has been that way for decades.
Yes, and we're not making a lot of headway there. You know, from my standpoint, and really as a researcher, we know that even before the pandemic, there was a connection between socioeconomic deprivation and really what is structural racism that takes its form as discrimination, policies that result in segregation, and again, that socioeconomic deprivation and gun violence. We've done research that shows that the redlined areas of the city from the 1930s are still the places where people are more likely to get shot today. And so for me, that's really where that connection lies. It's in sort of disinvestment and lack of opportunity. And that's where the solutions lie too, right? So some of the things that we're talking about are short-term public health solutions, but we also have long-term solutions that are going to be deep, deep investment in people and in places where gun violence is happening.
So we're talking schools, businesses, you know, quality of life, parks, lighting. I mean, I'm just thinking of all the things that can make a community
right.
livable.
So the built environment, which those are actually pretty easy solutions and very well evidence-based, right? There's tons of research in Philadelphia that shows that access to green space, improvement of building edifices can decrease gun violence in surrounding areas. We need to act on that research. We don't need to keep doing research on that.
We know that. Go ahead, Jamie. Go to you.
I just wanted to follow up on what Jessica said. This point is why I'm so insistent that our city needs to have a better approach to this. Government helped to cause this issue by not investing in communities. We absolutely have a responsibility to invest in people and neighborhoods in a way that would alleviate this violence. And traditionally, our government's participation on this issue has been in enforcement, investment in police and prisons and courts. There needs to be a response besides that that is about resourcing people and affected communities in a way that helps to roll back some of the damage that has been done over time.
Let me read a comment from Alex, and I'll put that back to you. Why isn't anyone talking about Krasner? He's a district attorney, and how there have been more shootings every year that he has been in office. And I'll just add a couple of things. Some concerns, especially after George Floyd, that the police is backing off. They're not, you know, making the kind of arrests that they need to make in order to keep the crime problem at bay. Can you respond to that?
I mean, obviously, the district attorney's office plays a role, right, in making sure that there's accountability for violence that's happening in our communities. Obviously, the police play a role in that. I don't know that no one's talking about Krasner. I think what I talk about is the fact that we spend most of our time focused on enforcement. We place most of our emphasis in this conversation on enforcement. We talk very little about proven methods of preventing people from picking up guns in the first place. We need to invest in that outreach that I was mentioning. We need to invest in real meaningful job opportunities that can keep people away from violence. We need to invest in healing people's trauma. We need to invest in making sure that people have a good quality of life in the places that they live. Those are all things that are proven that we've not chosen to do. Well, I would say, why is no one talking about that?
Well, hopefully, I mean, I think we are. But
enough people.
I hear you. Did you want to add to that, Arturo?
Yes, please. And I think I totally agree. And it's so important to think about the problem of violence in a developmental way, right? So, for example, hospital-based violence intervention programs started with treating victims mostly of gun violence, but also stabbing and physical assault, who were hospitalized due to their injuries. But as we evolve, right, for example, at Healing Her People, we have partnered with schools. So we're reaching younger kids who they might have a fight that doesn't end up in the kid being hospitalized, but we know that will be the next thing, right? Mm-hmm. Or because of a feud, that fight will end up with guns being involved and a kid being seriously injured or hurt. So early intervention, expanding from the walls of a hospital to schools, to the community, I think that's key.
Almost, I'm going to break here, and hopefully children will be back in schools where they can get the kind of services that they need. Let's take another short break, and we'll get back to our conversation. I also have an email from the Office of District Attorney Larry Krasner, which I will read after this short break. We're talking about Philadelphia's problem of violence, some of the solutions as well. And again, Jamie Gaudier, Philadelphia City Councilperson for the 3rd District, is our guest. Jessica Beard is a Temple University hospital trauma surgeon, and Arturo Zinni, Program Director for Healing Hurt People at Drexel University. You can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowain. We're talking about the fact that Philadelphia is facing a crisis of violent crime. Again, there have been more than 300 homicides so far this year. We're talking about some of the roots of the problem, also some of the solutions. And we did get an email just sent over from the office of DA Larry Krasner. It's a little long, but I'll do the best that I can. Overall, violent crime remains on a downward trend nationally and here in Philadelphia. I'm getting some nods. However, the crisis of shootings is real and higher than pre-pandemic in cities across the U.S., including Philadelphia. The crisis is specific. Solutions can and must be tailored specifically to address it. This is, generally speaking, good news. A very small number of people relative to the city's population is engaging in gun violence, much of it retaliatory. Our office supports council members' calls for a declaration of a gun violence emergency so the city can direct resources and programming specifically to people affected by gun violence and to communities where gun violence occurs most frequently. Jimmy Gotti, let me go back to you. I've been doing the show long enough to remember shows about community policing and focused deterrence and some of the things that we have talked about. But what we're getting from the district attorney's office is this idea, I think, of focused deterrence, which is when you look at the overall problem, it's a small number of people who are creating the largest number of problems.
Right, and we have something like Focus Deterrence called Group Violence Intervention that we've been implementing, I guess, for about a year now, starting in West and Southwest Philly. And this is where we're trying to identify people who themselves identify with a violent street group or clique and kind of put them on notice to stop shooting. And if you don't, we'll come down really hard on you for even, you know, other infractions besides shooting, but we also want to help you if you need a job, if you need housing, if you need other services. I think it's a good thing that we have implemented group violence intervention here. I think the services and support part of that program needs to be a lot more robust than it is. And I also think that we have to be more transparent about its implementation and how it's working.
Let me go back to you, Arturo Zinni, and just picking up on that, this idea of kind of, I guess, carrots and sticks, right? Both, you know, jobs, but also if you don't behave, in a sense, we're going to come down on you. Is that an effective approach? I mean, interpersonally and in dealing with people at risk for violence?
Yes, I think it's an approach, right? And it's different than the approach that we use at Healing Hurt People, where we focus on the healing and people come to us with mostly mental health needs, but also, as Jamie mentioned, multiple unmet needs from like needing to, you know, do housing relocation, health insurance reactivation, employment, education. But I do know it's an approach that has proven to work in certain cases. Right, like a more, I don't want to say punitive approach, but different than what we do at Healing Hurt People.
And you meet people sort of at their most vulnerable moment,
yes.
Right? They are,
yes.
They have been hurt, and they probably are in the hospital or maybe shortly released from the hospital at that moment of vulnerability.
Yes, and that moment, as you mentioned, a lot of times it's considered the golden hour because it might be, if we're talking about someone who maybe was involved in risky behaviors, and I don't want to stigmatize, right, but we were talking about drug dealing or something that was risky for that young adult, they might reconsider, right? Like that experience, like near-death experience might make them reconsider their lifestyle or what is it that they can do with our support in this case, right, to turn things around and turn their life trajectory.
Because they're vulnerable, right?
Yes.
I mean, they have witnessed, they are in some degree of trauma because of what happened to them.
The vast majority of the time, exactly. It's like acute traumatic stress right in the moment.
You wanted to add something?
I wanted to commend Healing Hurt People on their work and its effectiveness. And I also wanted to say that this is a model that we should be expanding in hospitals that are receiving a lot of shooting victims throughout the city. So as an example, we get a lot of victims at Presby. I don't believe we have...
This is in West Philly. Yeah.
Yes, and Presbyterian, I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay.
I don't believe we have hospital-based intervention at that site, but we should, right? That's an opportunity to change people's lives and to stop the cycle of violence.
Well, let me get you in on the conversation, Jessica Baird. You're a trauma surgeon. I mean, you are really on the front lines of this crisis, dealing with people at this extreme vulnerability.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I think that the kind of literature and evidence would show that that is a moment where, you know, people sort of realize and have the potential for maybe reassessing their situations. But I think one of the other really important things that needs to go hand in hand with a program like Healing Hurt People is, again, making the places where people live better, right? Because there's only so much that an individual who's been shot, remember, they're the victim of violence, and we are seeing more women and more children being shot since the onset of the containment policies in the pandemic, and we're seeing a higher proportion of mass shootings, which often involve, you know, people who are definitely an unintended target of the shooting. So as we're helping these victims to heal, we also need to be thinking about, and this is where the city can come in, is how do you send people back to places that are safe for them? Because I think there's only so much that an individual can do and that we can support an individual in, you know, making a change or what have you when they're going back to a place that's not safe.
Picking up on that, and back to you, Jamie Gaudier, there was a study recently that even rehabbing one house on a street can reduce crime.
Yeah, that study was from Dr. Self. And I think it proves that as a city, if we were to really train our resources on the neighborhoods experiencing this problem, so our housing rehab resources, the LNI, Parks and Rec, if we could help to change people's environment, we could bring down this violence. And it's not like this has to be spread, you know, these strategies have to be spread equally citywide. I worked with the controller to pull data that shows there are 14 zip codes in our city that are experiencing the most violent on most violence on a consistent basis. The city could right now say every operating agency needs to work together every single day to target and train its resources on those neighborhoods and on helping those people specifically.
You're nodding your head. Yes,
absolutely. I mean, I think addressing where the problem is and using the evidence, Dr. South and Dr. Brannis and Dr. Weeb are all great leaders in this field. We have tons of papers on this and tons of research. And I think now's the time to act on that evidence.
Here's a question from Nathan. He says, I'm not hearing anything new. Can someone suggest a way to reduce gun violence over the next 6 or 12 months? Or are we stuck with these killings? I'm going to go back to you, Jamie Gaudier.
Sure. So hearing the mayor say that he didn't want to formally declare an emergency, last Thursday I worked with Controller Reinhart to offer to him a different set of demands. We believe that there needs to be an emergency response group set up that includes every agency in the city targeted towards these 14 zip codes that I mentioned. Within this group, every agency would have a responsibility. The managing director's office would be on the hook to expand the amount of credible messengers who could be out in our neighborhoods and who could be effective at tamping down these conflicts before they turn to violence. Parks and Recreation can have extended operations in these neighborhoods and have social workers at our rec centers. We could absolutely right now expand hospital-based intervention programs in a way that helps. The Agency of Licensing and Inspections could be working on problem properties that are tied to violence. Also, the money that we put in the FY22 budget could be put out into neighborhoods right now in a way that matters. We put $5.6 million into our city's Commerce Department to develop a jobs program specifically for those most likely to shoot and to be shot as well. And we did that in addition to the $20 million that will be going out to grassroots organizations. I think these are things that can work in the near term, especially if it is done in accordance with enforcement. So we do have to work with police, but prevention and enforcement should be working hand in hand to really make an impact.
But it has to be sustained, right?
Yes, it has to be sustained, serious. It has to be evaluated. But again, if we're not willing to make this our number one priority, I'm not quite sure what we're doing or what else could be more important.
Here's a comment from Patty. My big concern is children growing up surrounded by the violence. Children have been shot and killed. I'm concerned about the lasting effect of living with this trauma on young minds and brains. I'm going to put that to you, Arturo Zinni. I mean, you work with young adults, but nonetheless,
yes.
They were children not long ago.
Our children's team is housed at St. Christopher's Hospital for Children, so we work with kids as young as five years old, yeah. So I think that's a great question that they brought up, and it speaks to the importance of intervening at multiple levels, not just with the child, but with the family, as early as possible to help families, you know, and this child heal from the impact of traumatic stress, because there's research that shows clearly that it not only impacts your emotions, but it can impact the child's brain at a structural level. So there are changes that if they happen, then they might not be reversible like later on.
Toxic stress,
often, yes.
Often called. Here's a comment from William. Philadelphia areas without poverty, Chestnut Hill, Greater Northeast, South Philadelphia, have little or no gun violence. Gun violence won't stop until we cure the extreme poverty where it's occurring. Jessica Beard, do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think that this goes back to what the council member is saying about, you know, doing the work where it needs to happen. And what she just described to you is something new. It is a public health approach to gun violence. You know, it is thinking about this in a different way, and we need true leadership. You know, we need a focused plan that isn't just about law enforcement, right? Law enforcement's a lot like what I do. We respond to it at the end. What we need to do is prevent gun violence, and we need a kind of interdisciplinary, all hands on deck response. And that's what she's describing.
Are there cities that you think, Jamie Gaudier, who are doing this better than Philadelphia, and ones that are models that we could borrow from?
Sure. There are cities that are absolutely carrying out approaches that we should be implementing here. There's a program, for example, called Advanced Peace that has worked on the West Coast where, you know, people who are kind of at risk or involved in violence are basically paid what I here are very hefty stipends to stop shooting or to not be involved in violence. And they also have to attend programming to kind of get on a better track. There's a program that's somewhat similar called Ready Chicago, where, you know, street outreach is used to connect with people who are at risk and surround them with intensive support and services. Philadelphia wants to pilot Ready Chicago here over the next year and is working to do that. And so I think those are all good things. I think we need to be looking for those solutions and implementing them faster. And I also think we need to be implementing them more broadly, right, where they need to happen.
Here's a comment from Avi. Isn't a dramatic improvement of the school system part of the solution? Lots of students graduate from high school without the ability to go to college. Arturo Zinni, I'm putting that to you. I mean, I don't think everyone should go to college, but certainly you need to be able to graduate from high school with usable skills. Have you found that to be true with the young people you work with?
Sadly, and I think despite, you know, kids we work with being highly skilled and intelligent, sometimes when, like, that's a clear effect of ongoing exposure to trauma, that you might not be able, let's say you're trying to pay attention in school while you're taking an exam, but you have flashbacks of the shooting you just witnessed, right? Or like 2 weeks ago you were shot and you just are not able to focus in school. And, you know, then you have poor grades. We see that a lot, that, for example, kids after being shot or witnessing a shooting, their grades going down.
Wow.
So, yes.
And you can see that. You can see that drop. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense to you, Jessica Beard?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the psychological effects of witnessing violence are far-reaching. And I think that's sort of one of the things that I think we can do better, you know, in terms of interrupting that cycle, preventing that acute stress from developing into PTSD. And that's what can happen on the individual level. Obviously, the community level is very important as well.
Sure. You wanted to add something?
I wanted to add that Councilmember Gim has been doing good work in this area. She has data that shows that there are 25 schools in our city that are on a consistent basis experiencing the loss of students to gun violence or having students injured due to gun violence. We need to focus on that. We need to make sure that those schools have the resources to deal with that trauma and to also surround those students with a different type of support.
Let me squeeze in one more comment from Mike. Changing the law, throwing money at the problem will not fix it. What we need is a change of heart. People want a proactive response from the police, but that is the same thing that gets them in trouble. The police are between a rock and a hard place. Picking up on that and going back to you, Jamie Gaudier, what is the role of the police? I know there's talk about having social workers going on. How do we reform what the police does to help this problem?
Police reform is important. If people don't trust the police, if people think the police are going to harm them, they won't cooperate with the police, and they're more likely to take justice into their own hands. So having a credible police department is very important in this discussion. Also, you know, police are an important part of enforcement. And a part of this discussion, absolutely. But even if you talk to police, they'll tell you they are not preventative. They are not. That's not their job. And they will admit that our city needs to have stronger preventative strategies that stop violence from happening in the first place.
Well, we could go on, but we have to end there. My thanks to all three of you. Thanks for the work that you do, and also thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. Jamie Gaudier, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And she's Philadelphia City Councilperson for the 3rd District. Jessica Beard, thank you for coming in as well.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
You're welcome. And she's Temple University Hospital Trauma Surgeon, Director of Research at the Philadelphia Center for Gun Violence Reporting. She's also a Stoneleaf Foundation Fellow. And Arturo Zinni, thank you for for coming in as well.
Thank you for having me, Marty.
You're welcome. He is Program Director for Healing Hurt People. That's at the Center for Nonviolence and Social Justice at Drexel University's Dornsife School of Public Health. For more information about the show, go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times under Programs. You can also download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you for joining us.